So, what are the important features of marine insurance policy? So, one of the features is that it uses standard terminology across the globe. So, the terms which I use are very standard and commonly understood by all the people. Liability of underwriter is several and not joined. So, the underwriters to the marine policy, they could be multiple underwriters, that means people who are actually going to bear the risk. And these liabilities are several and it's not a joint liability. So, that means if there are four underwriters, then four underwriters will actually pay for the insurance claim in case of an event. If one of the underwriters of the policy defaults, other underwriters or insurers are not liable to pay his portion. So, that means if one of the underwriter becomes insolvent or so for whatever reason, then his portion will remain unpaid. The other underwriters have to pay their portion depending upon what portion of the insurance has been underwritten by them. That means what portion was insured by them, or they have borne the risk of the insurance. Marine insurance split into two parts. So, marine hull and machinery and marine cargo. So, very clear. The hull and machinery refers to the ship, that means any damage to the ship or its machinery, which includes its engines and, you know, all the equipment on board which is required to operate a vessel. And marine cargo is basically the cargo that they are carrying, the third party cargo that they are transporting. Coverage can be on total loss basis, which means insurance claim is payable only on total loss. No insurance claim is payable in case of partial loss. That is similar to death policy without any accidental loss with respect to an individual. So, what it means is that as in the personal insurance, if you are taking an insurance policy which does not cover accident, then the life insurance will only cover the person in case of a death. If he is alive, then you cannot claim the insurance. So, likewise, here also, when you are talking of a total loss insurance policy, you will be able to claim this policy only if there is a total loss of the vessel. That means if the vessel sinks or it is completely destroyed in a fire or some such thing, only in that case you will be able to claim the benefit. Cover can be on the basis of one time, that is cover over a period, generally 1 year, or for a voyage from point A to B. So, we normally have these open policies, you know, most companies, most multinationals, they have this open policy which is taken for a year, and every year you negotiate and renew the policy. So, that is the time cover, and the other one is the voyage cover. Now, if you are actually relocating from one city to the other, you generally have these movers and packers. And the movers and packers will give you an option whether you want to insure your personal belongings which are being transferred. And if you opt to take the insurance is covered only for the movement of your goods from your existing residence or, you know, premises to the new premises. So, this is the second kind of insurance which we call as the voyage insurance, which is only for a particular transaction. So, that means it covers from port A to B, or it covers only one particular consignment that for which you have taken the insurance. Protection and indemnity. So, marine policy covers only 1/3 of the actual liabilities. Now, this could also depend upon the type of policies which are taken, because there are many policies which do cover 100%. But we are talking also of the history of the marine policy, etc. So, marine policy covers only 1/3 of the actual liabilities. To cover the rest, ship owners started a club popularly known as P&I Club, which is Protection and Indemnity Club. Some of the risks which P&I Club covers includes nuclear, oil pollution, etc. Because, take the example of oil pollution. If a tanker, oil tanker, has a breach, you will find that millions of liters of oil will be actually leaked to the ocean, and this has very far-reaching implications. Cleaning up an oil spill like this is a very, very expensive and a very daunting task. So you need to be insured, because otherwise, if the shipping company has to pay for this kind of a loss, it will practically, you know, finish the company. So club collects calls. Calls are similar to premiums, and they build up a sufficient reserve. The fund is used to obtain reinsurance. So they actually create a kind of a trust or a fund, which is then used to actually obtain reinsurance, you know, against this kind of risks. The concept of actual total loss and constructive total loss. So what is the difference? Actual loss is where the vessel and cargo is totally lost. So we talked about, you know, if there is a accident or something and the vessel sinks. So there is a total loss of, you know, the vessel and the cargo. The constructive loss is the vessel and the cargo, they are damaged in such a way that they cannot be reconstructed, cannot be salvaged. So in that case, it's termed as a constructive loss. So here you still have the vessel. I mean, the only way you can salvage it is maybe you can scrap the vessel, but physically you still have the vessel. So average clause, first type, particular average. So in case of a storm, a ship has to be protected, repaired. Certain cargo is to be jettisoned. Jettison is, you know, you actually throw the containers or the cargo into the sea just to save the vessel, you know, from sinking or, you know, if it is listing on one side, you know, you need to balance it, and the side on which it is tilting, maybe containers which are there on that side, you may just throw them into the sea. Basically, it is to limit the damage to the vessel. So, certain cargo is to be jettisoned or thrown away from the ship. Cargo owners whose cargo is safeguarded or protected, that means the cargo which is still on the vessel, needs to compensate the cargo owners whose cargo is jettisoned. So, particular average is thus applicable. So, here the average is taken of the value of the cargo which has been jettisoned and the cargo which is still on the vessel, and then the people whose cargo has been saved and which will be delivered, they are asked to pay some additional amount to compensate the people who have lost their cargo. Average clause, second type, that is under insurance. Applicable when the insured has taken less coverage than the actual value of the vessel or the cargo. So there is an example here. We will go through the example. If the insured has taken insurance of only 75 crores against the actual value of 100 crores of the property, this is a case of under insurance. So you know that the total value of the vessel and the cargo is, let's say, 100 crores, but you have consciously insured only for 75 crores. So this, you are consciously under insuring your assets. So in the event of a loss, say of 80 crores, the insurance company will be paying only 75% of the loss, which is 60 crores and not 80 crores. So because you have under insured on a pro rata basis, the insurance company will only pay you 75% of the total loss that you have suffered. So 80 crores is the loss you suffered, but you will not get 80 crores or 75 crores, you will only get 60 crores, which is 75% of your total loss. Average adjuster. So for the claims where average clause is applied, an expert is involved, and this expert is called an average adjuster. A specialist responsible for adjusting and providing the general average statement. So he is the one who is going to tell you what are the averages which should be applied and what is the kind of money which has to be you know, claimed from the people whose material has been salvaged or was saved. appointed by the ship owner or the insurer. Now we come to the concept of excess. So, excess is the amount payable by the insured in the event of a loss. Excess is used to discourage moral hazard or remove small claims. In normal parlance, excess means deductible, that is, the portion or percentage of loss the insured has accepted to bear, and it is also called as a retention. So, let me explain this. Even you have a car insurance, your car meets with an accident. Let us say total expenses are 50,000, and you will find that the insurance company will only pay part of it, and there are certain things which are excluded. Now, in case of a car, they will not cover certain plastic parts, certain glass parts. Likewise, even in health insurance, you know, if you have to be hospitalized, not the 100% of the bill is paid by the insurance company. There is a certain portion which is to be paid by the patient or the insurer. So, excess is, you know, this small portion which is to be borne, and it also discourages the people from making small claims. So, I mean, we have this kind of insurance policy which says that you cannot make a claim less than $1,000. So, if your damages are less than $1,000, then you cannot make a claim. Only if your claims are more than $1,000, then you can go for a claim. And even there, the excess will ensure that your $1,000 will be deducted. That means if your claim is for $3,000, you will only get $2,000. So, if your claim was, let's say, for $1,200 or $1,500, you will not make a claim, because, you know, the cost of pursuing the claim will actually offset the benefit or the claim amount that you're going to get. Tanners and Chinaman. So, tanner is a policy setting out the global tonnage loss for a year. If this loss is reached or exceeded, the policy is paid out. So, assume that the company takes a policy like this. Now, let me tell you that this kind of a policy is no longer in force. I understand that this was termed as illegal and discontinued around 1970, if I'm not mistaken. So, nobody uses this policy. But what this policy was doing was that you set out a certain, you know, a gross loss. You set a certain limit. So, at the end of the year, if that particular limit was exceeded, only then the insurance was paid out. So, for example, you are in a year, let's say, exporting 10,000 tons of cargo, and if your damages exceed 100 tons, only then the insurance will be paid. And this threshold was already decided. And the Chinaman is a policy which is exactly the reverse. So, here you have, it acts as a cutoff or a upper limit. So, if your losses are beyond a certain limit, then you will not get the claim. If your losses are below this limit, only then you will get your claim. The message being that if you have losses higher, then there is something that you're not doing correct. That means something you're doing wrong, because of which you have very high claims or losses. So, these are the early forms of reinsurance, and both are technically unlawful. They are no longer applicable. Cargo insurance. So, insurance is offered under institute clause on various A, B and C basis, where A category is the widest coverage. So, that means this is the most comprehensive kind of a coverage, and C is the most restricted kind of a coverage. So, also the premiums that you pay will be different for A, B and C. So, A will be having the highest premium, and C will have the least premium. A valuable cargo is also called as a specie. So, this is just for information. Warranties and conditions. So, what are the normal understanding? Conditions, if condition is breached, the whole contract ends. So, the conditions are specified, and if the condition is not fulfilled or not complied with, then your insurance is not valid. That means your insurance contract ends there. You don't get any claim. warranty, breach of warranty will not result into breach of the entire contract. So under the insurance law, the meaning of the two about terms is reversed, and we will see how it is. So implied warranties exist that the vessel is seaworthy and is fit for sailing. Now many places the insurance policy will dictate, and it will tell you that the vessel should not be older than so many years, and that it has to be seaworthy, or it has to have been inspected at least in the last 1 year or so. So these are the conditions. Now assume that you have booked your consignment on a vessel which is older than the condition which has been specified, and it has not been inspected in the last year. So in case there is an accident and the vessel sinks and your cargo is lost, the condition has been breached. So in this case, you will not get insurance claim. So this is what we mean by if the condition is breached, the whole contract ends. That means you don't get any. The same is the case with life insurance also. If a person dies of natural causes or accidents, etc., the life insurance will hold good. But if somebody commits suicide, then the life insurance condition is breached and you will not get the insurance. Okay. Salvage means the practice of rendering assistance or aid to a vessel under distress. So salvage basically means recover. And here, if a vessel is handicapped and it is unable to sail on its own, unable to drive itself on its own, then the practice of rendering assistance or aid to the vessel to bring it to the port or what, you may have to tug it, so this operation is then called as salvage. Salvage is also, if a vessel is actually sunk, you try to resurface the vessel and maybe retrieve the cargo, etc., if it's a very valuable cargo. So that is also salvage. Sailors honor bound to render assistance where required. And you have known this, that generally if a vessel is in distress, the sailors generally will not abandon the ship. They will render assistance to save the ship as far as possible. Only when things go beyond control, they will abandon the ship. Policy has sue and labor clause, which covers reasonable cost incurred by the ship owner in avoiding a greater loss. So there are certain policies with this clause of sue and labor, where certain actions which are taken, which actually increase the claim amount, are allowed because they are actually done, like jettisoning of the containers, etc. So that is acceptable because you are actually saving a bigger loss. That means you are avoiding the ship from sinking. So this kind of clauses allow for the salvage. So what are the probable reasons for damage to the cargo? And there are, it's long list of why the cargo can be damaged. You can actually go through the list. It's fairly common sense, easy to understand, except for one or two things. You might see a point called as lack of reefer points. So reefer point is normally you have the refrigerated containers, and the refrigerated containers have a self-contained unit. It's got a engine which runs on petrol or diesel, but when it is on the ship or at the port, then they have to be plugged into an electric supply so that the air conditioners will maintain the temperature. So suppose the reefer point is not there and it has very limited amount of fuel. So suppose the refrigeration stops, the temperature inside the container may go up, and actually the material which is stored inside, which is temperature sensitive, may get spoiled. So rest of the things are fairly easy to understand. International regulations covering the global sourcing and international supply chain. So various kind of regulations, associations, bodies, which are there to actually, protect the interest of the international supply chain or the global sourcing. So you have the U.S. Shipping Act of 1984, U.S. Federal Maritime Commission, IATA, we have already seen that they are also dictating some of the regulations relating to transportation of material by air, including dangerous goods, etc. Harmonized system, which is a harmonized system of classification of goods, so that the classification is seamlessly understood across different nations which have adopted the HSN codes. So, International Product Nomenclature System adopted by 190 countries. I think today it is a little more than 190 countries, because more and more countries are now going for the HSN system for classification of the material which are being traded. The World Trade Organization Agreement on Methods for Determining the Custom Valuation for Assessment of Duty. So earlier, you know, every country had a different method of assessing the duty. There is a move to harmonize how the custom valuation and duty assessment is being done. So the duty percentages can be slightly different between countries, but the way the custom valuation and the assessment of the duty, the methodology will be uniform or harmonized. Revised Kyoto Convention, simplification and harmonization of methods and procedures of national customs authorities. So even the custom authorities, the methods that they use, they are being harmonized so that there is minimum friction for transfer of goods, so that you don't have material getting stuck in the customs since they follow similar kind of methods. The Arusha Declaration on Customs Integrity, revised in 2003, it's a reference point for addressing issues of corruption in customs administration. So here you can even make a faceless complaint in case you are finding that there is any corruption issue, etc. As you know, today we are doing the custom clearance through EDI, and it's a faceless assessment. So things are fairly transparent now, and you can actually clear the customs within 1 or 2 days if all your documentation is properly handled, which we've already covered in one of the earlier chapters. The World Customs Organization Framework of Standards to Secure and Facilitate Global Trade, SAFE program contains 17 standards that promote the security and facilitation of the international supply chain. So again, here it's a framework which decides on, you know, what is the kind of documentation, etc., which is needed for, you know, very prompt, swift movement of cargo through the customs. Electronic manifest information. So earlier the manifest were made in a hard copy on a paper. Today all the shipping lines and airlines actually have electronic manifest information. So before the vessel or the aircraft arrives, the manifest is actually lodged with the port and the custom authorities, who can actually scrutinize what are the materials which are being carried, which are going to be offloaded and which are going to be taken further. So common risk management methods and approaches, inspection of high risk cargo at the origin, and trade facilitation, uniform customs and practice for documentary credits. So even there are some standards for documentary credit, which is nothing but letter of credit, or LC as we call it. So the terms are all standardized, makes it very easy to interpret the LC terms. FONASBA, which is Federation of National Association of Ship Brokers and Agents. So again, this is a body regulating the profession of ship brokers and the shipping agents in the global supply chain, to bring about uniform practices and also to, you know, avoid any kind of a malpractice of overcharging, etc. So certain regulations have been set down, which are uniformly followed across the globe. Trade agreements. Trade agreements are of the preferential and the free trade types, and concluded in order to reduce or eliminate tariff, quotas, and other trade restrictions on items traded between the signatories. We have talked in one earlier chapters about the bilateral trade agreement or a free trade agreement. Normally, a bilateral trade agreement will be between two countries. So two countries which prefer to do trade with each other sign an agreement, and under this agreement there could be concessions given in terms of the duties which are applicable. So if you have a standard duty which is applicable on an item, but under the bilateral trade agreement you could be getting certain concessions, or in few cases there will be no duty which will be payable on items which are desirable. Also you have the free trade agreement where it's signed between a group of countries. Normally these kind of agreements are signed within Asia. There is a agreement called as ASEAN agreement, so where a group of countries are jointly signing, and whenever there is a trade between these countries you will find that there are some concessional rate of duties which are available. Also in clearance of the goods, custom clearance, there is a priority given, and you know, the clearance is much faster compared to the non FTA or BTA countries. Agreement can be bilateral or multilateral. Also you have the agreements with the most favored nation. That means you designate a nation as a most favored nation, as I think India has done in case of Japan. So it also gives certain privileges for the importers who are importing from the most favored nation. Green channel facility. So major importers are being given green channel facility countries for speedy clearance of cargo. There is no physical inspection of the goods. So when there are big you know, corporates who are, you know, importing or exporting on a very large scale, they have very good credibility, excellent track record. So then they are given this green channel facility. They are also given certain designations in the form of star you know, trading houses or import houses, etc. So by which they can clear the goods much faster, basically based on their volumes, their credibility and the clean record that they have. WCO, World Customs Organization, intergovernmental organization, comprises of 174 member states and deals with 98% of the international trade. So these people are basically facilitating the easy global procurement processes. With that, we come to end of this chapter. Thank you.